It doesn't mention that Frank was really a cement in the department. He interacted with people, whether they're physical chemists, inorganic chemists, or whatever, analytical chemists.
It started very early on. I mean, one of his early important papers was that work with, I guess he did some work with Joe Mayer, and he did work with Kirkwood, who was there for only a short period.
The work with Kirkwood was a very important paper.
Yeah.
He did one on hindered rotation in diphenyl.
That's right.
I think that was with the physical chemist, wasn't it?
Yes.
I didn't know about that he had a paper with Mayer.
I think on a very similar kind of program. They were very close to the Mayers, I guess.
Yes, they were. I suppose if Frank had stayed at Chicago, I'd still be there.
Oh.
Because when he left, it made a big difference to me because... I guess my social relationships with my colleagues remain warm and cordial, but in terms of our work, we began to take each other for granted, sort of. The cross-fertilization of ideas was not so noticeable toward the end of my stay there as it was early. This wonderful seminar that I talked about, I think, lasted only about 2 years.
Yes.
And I still don't remember why it was given up. So it may be that...
It sounds very familiar,
having
been in other departments where you have things like even our own department, where every so often somebody will get the idea of having a close a seminar among colleagues. Our newest faculty member, Leslie Davenport, has started a literature seminar each week.
That's what
young people do, and then after a while you get off on your own thing.
It's strange that I don't remember how or when that seminar was discontinued. I guess it died with a whimper, not with a bang.
Do you have any particular philosophy when you were chairman?
No, I didn't. I was really not ready for the chairmanship, I have to say. And still puzzled as to why my colleagues selected me. I think that I was the least objectionable of a number of
alternatives.
Number of alternatives. And they felt I'd cause less trouble than anyone else. There was I got involved in a way that was very unpleasant for me early. That's not quite the word, I don't know. But I'll tell you the story, because it spoiled my life as chairman for at least a year and a half. I had not gotten the chairman's seat won when Morris Karsh came in and said, you know that I am proposing Walter Nudenberg for a tenured position in the department. But there was a preamble. He said, my group is getting to be very big and I can't run it alone, and I had Walter running it all this time. Now Walter is having an attractive offer from industry, and I'm going to lose Walter unless the department gives him position as a tenured professor. And I pointed out to Morris I thought there would be difficulty with that in the department, because I felt that my colleagues had the view that every faculty member would be independent in research. And Carr said, yes, I understand the feeling on this in the department, but, you know, I think I'd like to argue the case, and would you, as chairman, introduce it for discussion? I said, of course, Morris, I will. And he said, would you, as chairman, support it? And, you know, I was a tactful young man. I could have avoided the issue, but never my way. I said, no, Morris, I can't. I wouldn't support it. And he didn't expect that from me, because he probably felt that I was a bit pliable or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned white in his face. He walked up and down in my office and said, well, in that case, I have no alternative but to resign. And I didn't really know how to handle it. I didn't really handle it. I did, I think, what was the right thing. I didn't do anything.
That's right. You know, I would feel much the same way. What can you do in a situation like that?
And eventually a letter came from him, a formal letter of resignation. And I think I responded to that in some way. And then events began to take place. Morris published the news that he was leaving the University of Chicago and was looking for a place that he could be more comfortable in. I'm not sure that he got any offers, but there were a couple of phone calls to me, and people inquired into the circumstances. I didn't badmouth Morris anyway, because I have both a respect and I loved him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But he could be difficult.
That's the impression I get from talking to other people.
Yeah, he could be difficult. He'd get stubborn. You know, he made a mistake in resigning in my presence like that. And an older man, if I had been more his age, I could have gone in and patted him on the shoulder. Come on, Morris, you don't really mean that.
Right.
What can we do to keep you here? But we weren't on that basis, and I don't think I could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we did then, though, was to persuade the administration, let's make an arrangement for Morris so that he can stay here and is comfortable with his resignation of the department. And we talked the administration into creating an institute.
Oh, that's when the institute
that's
was
correct,
formed.
Yeah.
Aha.
Yeah. Okay. And the question of his relations to the Prague department were never defined. I think it was better not to go into any details. I don't think any articles of agreement were drawn up. It essentially meant that Morris operated as he did before, which was sort of independent of the rest of the department.
Which didn't really change a hell of a lot, right?
It changed a hell of a lot.
Right.
Well, look, in the course of this very bad blood develop, very bad feelings between Mrs. Karlosh and me, other members of the Karlosh family and me, and also former students of Morris Karlosh who didn't know what went on. And Mary, in fact, invented a new verb. It's not a verb, it's a participle, like Karashi. I was Karashi for about almost 2 years. Well, the reason that it's tragic is that Morris died shortly after he had his institute. And I can't help but feel that the tension, because it was not an easy time for him, that he went through had its effect. I remember sitting behind Morris, looking at, well, he was older than I, looking at the back of his head. Just feeling,
Newton,
my God, what a shame.
Before the formation of the Institute, then. I guess he took that attractive offer.
Yeah. Well, I talked to Walter, and I explained the department's position, and, you know, Walter and I were friends, personal friends. Walter was very helpful to me sometimes when I needed a piece of apparatus or needed access to a back line. Always cooperative, always fun to talk to, but it really was the principal of the department, and one that we wouldn't have violated for anyone. And I think by then, Walter was so sick of the whole situation that he wouldn't have stayed on it. He's a very nice, I don't know whether you know him or met him. He went into industry.
Yes.
I think he did extremely well. To this day, I don't know whether he was.
Rush had the habit of using people, though, in much way.
Yeah.
Frank Mayo left as a result of that.
Right,
I guess H.C. Brown wasn't really used.
It would be hard to use.
Yes, right.
It's tougher than most.
There's a letter which I was almost, it was in the archive, which I was almost embarrassed to read. It was a letter, I think, concerning Bill Urey. And I can't remember who wrote the letter. It was the administration suggesting that Bill Urey might leave the university because they were afraid that he was just too linked to Karash, and it would be far better for him and his career if he went elsewhere and would be sort of separated from
Karash. Well, he cut himself off from Karash, but that was not without some difficulty and anguish. I'm not sure they remained good friends after that.
I see.
Yes, it's quite true. You see, Morris had this way of dealing with people.
Well,
but there's another.
And even, I think, Clyde Dillard told me that you should talk to Gutenberg one day because he felt very used by,
in retrospect. He never said that to me, you see, because he had this tremendous respect for Morris.
Yeah.
But we thought that he was being used, yes, we did.
Maybe.
Because he never published an independent paper, I think, it always had Morris's name on it.
Yeah.
And yet there was absolutely nothing wrong with Walter's brains. No, see, but for that, a sort of stipulation that Walter would continue to work with him, Walter would have been a serious contender for a position if it had existed. There was another point we'd have to show that we needed a position.
It's interesting because then N.C. Yang was there and eventually did kind of end up in that position, I guess.
I guess. I didn't really follow the... Yeah, I think he did in a way, yeah.
Because he came in with a fellow by the name of Rudy to take over Gutenberg's position.
That's correct.
And then shortly thereafter, Karash died.
Yeah, Tom Rudy went to Shell Development.
That's right. He went back into industry. And
I heard from Tom about a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've seen him since.
Uh-huh.
He's not, well, Shell Development closed, I think, that when they moved to Houston, Tom left, stayed in the area, and he has a different job now. Well, I know that Tom never had any bad feelings toward me on account of my dealings with Morris.
Now, how you remain chairman until?
I think the term of office was 3 years.
I see. So you didn't stay chairman until you left?
No. I had had a fill of it, and I was simply no good at it. I couldn't keep books. You know, I really took advantage of
Jimmy Parsons
Warren Johnson. Yeah.
I see.
And you can't run a department in the red every year.
No.
Well, the department was treated very poorly, though it was true by the administration, because it was traditional. It came from Stieglitz, and we'd never been able to break that tradition, in contrast to the way the institute.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about your own philosophy of handling, you know, the high pressures of working at a major university. That is, you mentioned today that you worked so hard at Cornell, it disrupted your family life. How do you think in general that affected you?
I didn't think of it in those terms. I mean, I wanted to do what I was doing, and I don't think I could have done anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And it was only a factor in the breakup of the marriage. But I didn't spend enough time with my family. I didn't have enough time for them. I didn't really get to know my wife. It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
The person. It was really so rapid.
How did your wife after that handle that?
You see, by then circumstances had changed. Because, see, the trouble was that at Cornell, all the research I did was with my own hands.
Right.
You see.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got graduate students, the relationship changed. I still worked in the laboratory, sometimes in the evening, but I didn't have that for example, I wouldn't work all night anymore, as I did in Cornell very often. So it was a much more normal married life. I'd learned something in the interim. I was actually too green to get. I was too green for a lot of things that happened. But, you know, grow up,
yes,
survive.
Yeah. Fortunate that we do learn. I guess man is such an animal.
Well, this is grand.
The previous day, I had asked Henry Tabby about George Whalen. I told him that Frank Westheimer had said that George Whalen was one of the brightest people he had ever met, but that for some reason he didn't have the energy to produce the products that his mind might have been capable of producing. Henry indicated that he disagreed with that analysis. He thought that Whalen had a very narrow view of chemical problems, that his answer to most problems was resonance, and that he couldn't see the other effects that might be important in the explanation of certain observations. During Dr. Tabby's talk today, he spoke of a memoir for G.N. Lewis that had been written by Joel Hildebrand. I assume that was a memoir from the National Academy of Sciences. In that memoir, Hildebrand indicated that during the Lewis years at Berkeley, the department was never divided up into sub-disciplines, that everyone essentially practiced chemistry, and that everyone worked on all kinds of problems. These last two comments were a postscript added on the evening of March 19th, after I dropped Henry Tabby off at Grand Central Station.